Splash, splash, splash. Welcome back to the XL podcast.
I can't ever take host. You seriously.
I'm your host, Gabe Oldham, and this is also your host, Gavin Oldham. Today, I'm feeling a little fruity. Not fruity, actually. I'm not feeling fruity.
Gabe's definitely feeling fruity, I can tell.
I'm not feeling fruity. I'm feeling fancy. We're going to bring a quote of the day. I got a quote of the
day. Quote of the day? Let's hear it.
Quote of the day. Tears of joy are like the summer raindrops pierced by sunbeams.
All right. Not bad.
Do you feel inspired, Gavin? Because I sure do.
I don't know if it was from that, but I guess we can say I feel inspired. Why not? All right.
How you doing, man?
Good, dude. Pretty good. Good day at work. Had some good food. And I'm on a podcast talking with my brother, so I can't complain. How was your past week?
Ups and downs. A lot of ups, a lot of big things happening, but downs because it's the end of the school, of the semester, and so just a lot of headache. I had, let's just say I had a falling out with my Spanish teacher.
Heck yeah.
We'll say, I don't want to get specifics, but I just what happened with my Spanish class just proves that college is a scam. And it's not actually what you know and what you're trying to train you and, like, teach you things. It's they just want your money. And I'm saying that because I literally speak Spanish, and yet somehow I'm going to fail my Spanish class.
Interesting.
That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. Right.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Rip to Spanish class.
Rip to the Spanish class. Hopefully I don't fail it, but probably am. Hopefully. Most likely.
But, well, let's... have little positives in there.
The reason I'm saying hopefully I don't is because I've gone through a couple resources, hopefully that they can soften the heart of the professor, but it's not looking too good. We'll just say that.
Yikes. Well, I guess that's a good transition, Spanish, I guess, to what we wanted to talk about today. As many of you know, me and Gabe are both from the LDS religion, also known as Mormons, more commonly known. So we kind of want to talk about, you know, being both two able young men that were able to go on missions. We kind of want to talk about our experiences there. Maybe not so much on the religious side this time. Maybe we'll get into that and kind of our faith later on, but more the ridiculousness that comes with being an 18-year-old with essentially no supervision, and for some reason, all the trust in the world to go and do what you're supposed to as a missionary and to preach to the world. And as much work as, you know, those young missionaries do, we're also, remember, 18 to 20 year olds. We're very dumb. So you get yourself into some interesting positions, do some dumb things, and it usually involves some pretty funny stories. So we kind of want to talk about that, kind of go through the whole process of kind of what a mission looks like, you know, all the way from, you know, getting your call to coming home and everything in between that. So, I think Gabe has a way better call story than I do, only because it makes me laugh really hard. But I'd love to hear kind of how you got your call and the feelings you had and then how you read your call.
So, background. In our faith, you submit your papers, medical history, blah, 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 just to let the church know that you're eligible, you're healthy, you're able to serve a mission for 2 years, a full-time mission for 2 years. And then it goes to the apostles in our church, the 12 apostles, our modern-day apostles, and they, through revelation and prayer, will choose somewhere for you to go serve. It could be anywhere in the world, anywhere that the government in that location permits missionaries legally.
Yes.
So, and it's, and obviously, too, like, it's safe for missionaries to be there. So I got, and then you get your
only reason I passed seminary.
What do you mean?
So in certain countries, you have to have a certain amount of, schooling in your religion. So you have to have like a certificate saying like, hey, I know about my religion for this many years. So in order to preach in that country, so that's the only reason I did all 4 years of seminary. 'Cause I knew that. So had I not passed all 4 years, like I wouldn't have been able, like you can't go to a lot of the, like pretty much you can't go to a lot of countries outside of the United States.
Oh.
There's not like, you're not
I didn't know that.
Restricted to the United States, but there it does limit. So I was like, I need to pass seminary because I want so bad to leave the U.S.
Right, me too. So you get your call in like an email or like a text, and then you can open it up and it's just a few pages. And then
oh my gosh, you got yours in a text?
Mine is a text. Well, it's a link, and then you click on the link, and it opens it up to your LDS account on the website, and then you can go into it.
That's weird.
That's how I got mine. Yeah. So, and
how long did it take? How long did it take you to get your call? So, like, you submit your papers. How long from submitting the papers to getting call? How long did that take for you?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Dang. Okay.
So yeah, I submitted my papers. And I think it was 2 weeks when I got the text. Okay, I think.
That's pretty. So, cool,
I So yeah, I was gonna give history about a little background. It's just that it's very typical in our faith for someone who is gonna open their mission call to make kind of a an event out of it. You could say, you know, invite your friends and families over. You know, that man or woman will stand in front of their friends and families and open up their call. Usually, it used to come in paper form, which is why Gavin's freaking out that I got a text.
Yeah, because I was kind of like, I'd say one of the last kind of group to get it in paper. Because, like, all of this, like, digitalizing of missions kind of was happening while I was on my mission, which made my mission, like, 1,000 times weirder.
Yeah. And I got the digital mission. So, yeah. They make a big event out of it, which is why Gavin wants to hear my story so bad. Because I used to work at a sprinkler store delivering sprinkler parts in a truck. And here comes the 2 weeks. And I get a text. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's my, like I said, your mission call is ready to be opened. Click this link. I was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. And so I remember I never really liked, I don't know, I just didn't like the idea of opening your mission call in front of everyone. For two reasons. Like, if you didn't go a place you want to go, then you have to, like, have this, like, fake reaction. Like, oh, yeah. I'm so excited to go to this place, and I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And two, and I think maybe the other reason why I didn't want to do it was just because that's what everyone did. And I'm a person that just doesn't like to do what everyone else does.
That's fair.
Call me weird for just specifically that, but that is literally specifically what is part of me. Is I don't like to do things just because everyone else does it, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. I totally get that.
I feel like a lot of people are that way, but for me, it's like even to that, I had that feeling like I don't want to do that just because everyone else does
it. I get both sides of it.
Unique or fun.
I was definitely the same way, and I'll mention my side of that story here in a second, but I get both sides of it because it's also like I get the event because it's like this is essentially deciding my future for the next 2 years. You know, this is where I'm going to be. So I kind of get it, but, you know, obviously we kind of grew up in very similar, we grew up in the exact same situation, you know, we grew up together. So like, I very much was the same. I was like, I don't care. Like to the point where I got mine in the mailbox and almost opened it in the 30-foot drive back home. Cause I felt like I should at least share that with mom. Cause she was at home at the time. Like I got mine in the summer. So like, I should probably share that. No, I didn't get in the summer. Actually, that's totally a lie. Never mind. Anyways. But yeah.
So, yeah, I got the text, and I just had that feeling like, oh, man, I got to open this. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to open it. And then that was like 8 a.m. That's like right when I started working, and I had like an 8-hour day, you know? And, well, you would think, oh, yeah, through this 8-hour day, well, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. There's two things to the ultimate decision that I made. First thing was those feelings I had, and I was just kind of thinking about like, dude, I should just open it right now. Yeah. I could know where I'm going right now. I can just look and see where I'm going. And then it didn't help that I also had a coworker who had just barely gotten back from his mission. I want to say in Portugal. I know he spoke Portuguese, but I don't remember where it was. It might have been Portugal or maybe like Africa or something. But he had just gotten back from his mission. Oh no, he definitely went to Brazil. That's why he spoke Portuguese. Brazil. It doesn't matter. I'm sorry for going into that. But he got back and he was egging me on. He's like, open it, dude. Just right now. Open it here. Open it. Just like right here. Open it.
Heck yeah.
Eventually, it wasn't even lunch yet. I just go, all right, bet. I'm opening it.
I remember this so vividly.
I said, whatever. I'm opening it. And I just had my coworker video me because I was like, hey, I know my mom's going to be mad, but at least I'll have a video for her. You know, that's what I thought. At least I'll have a video I could give her.
I remember this. Hold on. This is the POV of the rest of the family because we have a big family group chat. When he got his call, he goes, guys, I have my call. We'll open it up later tonight. Essentially was the gist of the text. Because that's just the gist. Then we get this.
And then I was like, screw it, I'm opening it. So I opened the call, and it says, you've been called to serve in California, Ventura, Spanish speaking. And I was like, and then I text my family, and I said, I don't remember
I don't think you said anything. I think you just texted the video.
Did I just text the video? No, I swear I just texted, like, I'm going to California or something like that.
I can't remember. All I remember is because, like, I was also at work. I can't remember what I was doing at the time. But I was also at work, and I just get, like, a text, you know, in the morning. Hey, I got my mission call. I'm like, oh, sick. And then, like, Gabe made it, maybe to 10:30. Maybe. Gabe made it, like, two and a half hours max.
Yeah, seriously.
And so while I was at work, that seemed like 5 minutes. That's all I remember. I remember, like, it was like, hey, I have my mission call. And then, like, 2 minutes later is what it felt like to me was – a video of Gabe opening up his mission call going to California.
Yeah. And it was funny, too, because I remember, like, I posted on my social medias, like, hey, my house tonight, 7 p.m., I'm going to open up my call. And
I was like, never mind.
I think I did that after I had already made the decision to open it because I wanted just to pump fake everybody. I just wanted to mess with everybody.
That makes that even better.
And then I send another picture on my social media saying I'm going to I already opened it. I'm going to California, and everyone was texting me, DMing me, saying like, "Are you really? Like, is this real? Is this real? Are you real?" And so I was like, "Dude, no one believes me." So I just screenshotted it, circled the part that said like California Ventura. I said, "I'm not joking. I'm going to California. I already opened it."
Heck yeah. That was so funny to me. I was dying laughing at work the entire day.
And then I think mom called me or something. I don't remember exactly the specifics, but I remember mom called me and she was like, she actually wasn't that mad. She was like, oh my gosh, like congratulations, blah, blah, blah. She's like, come home during lunch and we can kind of like hang out and kind of celebrate a little bit.
I feel like that was the most Gabe way to open up a mission call ever.
Gotta be.
Like that describes Gabe so well.
And then the thing that I was surprised with, I thought mom was being mad. Mom didn't even care that much. Dad was not mad, but dad was upset. Like, he was like, dude, we didn't get to be a part of that. Like,
that's fair.
He was like, you didn't even want to come home for lunch and just open it with us? Like, what? Like, he was upset. Rightfully so. Like, I don't blame him, but, you know, I just couldn't, like.
I don't know.
The spur of the moment, it got to me.
I talked to dad about it, and dad was the same way. Dad was so excited. But it's an exciting thing. I mean, as much as everybody else wants to know, nobody wants to know more than you.
Of course you're not. Like, that's where you're going. Everyone else, because the thing is, too, is like once you open it, everyone's always like, oh, that's cool. Then they forget about it.
That's it.
It's just there.
That's your life for the next 2 years. And all those experiences are going to live with you for the rest of our life, which is why we're talking about them now, you know?
Right.
I totally get that. I was the same way. I remember, I got my mission call in paper form. What was even weirder is like, because I was so excited to go on my mission. So, like, I went and talked to my bishop. He was like, all right, let's submit your papers. Submit my papers. And our stake president, when you were also a missionary, same stake president, was one of my close friends' dads. But he was on a cruise at the time, which was kind of funny. But he, like, we were really close. Like, he was, like, would call me and, like, give me updates on my call. Because he kind of has, it's kind of think of, like, when you ship a package and you can, like, get updates on the package and where it's at. That's kind of the updates your stake president gets on your call. Like, legitimately. He was like, okay, it arrived, like, in paper form. Okay, it arrived at the church offices.
Headquarters.
Okay, now the apostles are, it's in the stages of, like, the apostles are looking at it. And that usually takes, you know, because they kind of just get a stack of them, you know, and they kind of go through them. And obviously, it takes time for each one because, like Gabe said, they pray about it and receive revelation on where this missionary should go. So that usually, you know, when yours is put in the stack, it usually takes a couple days. So usually, when it was paper form, you know, you were expected to get yours no quicker than a month to 6 weeks was like kind of your 4 to 6 weeks was kind of your window. I got mine in 9 days.
Holy cow, paper form?
Paper form, got it in 9 days. I was so stoked. Like, he called me and said, hey, they're looking at it. And then, like, the next day, I remind you, this is my state president was awesome, great guy. He's on a cruise and called me while I was at work and said, hey, like, he was getting updates and was excited for me. He was like, hey, guess what? They're looking at him. Like, oh, sick. And then, like, that was like Saturday. Monday calls me. It should be arriving any day this week. It went through. They put it in, like, the mail. Like, that's what it was. They put it in just regular, like, you know, in the postal. And I got it in 9 days. So it was a Saturday. And, you know, just every day I was excited. So I got home from school and I go, look, you know, is it in the mail? Come home, you know, every day. It's a Saturday. It's early in the morning. Mail, you know, I had to the point where I knew when the mail truck came. So it was about like 10:15. I walk outside. It's about usually like when the mail truck has gone, filled it up and has left. Well, I walk out and I see that the mail truck is probably running a little late and they drive in front of our house. I'm like, I just felt like I was like, my call is on that truck right now. Like, I could feel it. So I kind of wait like probably 10 minutes so he can load up the thing and you know, not bug him. And then I go grab it. Sure enough, it's in there. And like I just said, you know, like I said earlier, like I was so tempted to like, literally it's not even a full block down the road to where our mailbox is. It's like one of those community mailboxes. Not even all the way down the road. It's a 30-second drive back home. I was like, I'm just going to open it right here in my car. Like I almost did. Not even kidding. And then I was like, no, you know what? I'll go back. I'll open it with mom. It was a Saturday. So I go, I'm like, mom, I got my call. And she's like, that's sick. I'm like, okay, I'm going to open it. She goes, no, like your family needs to be here. Like she wanted like people to be there. Like the only reason people were at my call, I hope everybody knows, the only reason people were involved is because of mom. I was going to open it right there with mom. That was it. Even dad, like dad, if you're listening to this, I love you. Dad was doing some. I don't remember where he was at, but all I remember was like, I'm opening it. I did not care. And so mom was like, no, people need to be here. And so this is what I said. I said, they got 20 minutes. Whoever's here, they're here. If they're not here, sucks for them. Like, that's literally what I said. And on the dot, I'm not even kidding. And if there's anything you should know about the Oldham clan, on dad's side of the family, being on time is not their forte. So that's why it's more of a suggestion. So I said, you got 20 minutes. Some people showed up. Some people didn't make it. And I did not care. On 20 minutes, I opened up my call.
Did you wait for Grandma Bush to get there? Like the 2-hour drive? Didn't you give her like 2 hours?
She was on the phone.
Oh, she was?
Okay. She was on the phone. Did not wait. And so I just opened up my call and I opened it and, you know, it said you're called to serve. And I was so stoked because I saw the word Mexico. I was called the Mexico Saltillo Mission. I was so pumped. I got to leave the States. I wanted to speak Spanish so bad. And I think a lot of it just stemmed from like my dad being able to speak Spanish and all the stories he kind of told us, but he went to Spain. So he got to go to Europe. But I got to go to Mexico. I was so pumped. It was even funnier. And I'll be honest, kind of made me a little bit happy because one of my biggest pet peeves and definitely grows from mom is people being late. And so people showed up late after I opened my call. I'm like, you didn't wait for us? And I was like, no, I told you, you got 20 minutes. Sorry.
20 minutes, brother.
To be fair, not their fault. They did get in the car and immediately leave. They just live farther than 20 minutes away.
it's their fault. That is their fault. Should have lived closer.
Should have lived closer, you know?
Should have lived closer, bud.
But yeah, I was so pumped. Got to speak Spanish. What made me sad though, because like Gabe said, and I honestly in that moment I wish, and you can see it when I read my call, I have the video. I was so pumped. I was like, go Mexico South to you, and they're like, when are you leaving? And I look, and that's when kind of my heart sunk a little bit, because like I was one of the first people in my class, you know, being in Utah, where like the main religion here in Utah is being LDS. So like all of my friends are also LDS and all of them got their calls. I was one of like the first, like I think my buddy whose dad was the stake president got his call. And then like, I got my call and he was leaving like, you know, a couple weeks after we graduate. And that's essentially like, that's when I put my date. Like I put my date as availability for May 24th. And we graduated May 23rd. Like I was like, that was my dream. My dream was like, honestly, my dream was graduate that day, get on a plane and leave. Like that was my dream. Same day of graduation, leave on a plane. Obviously that didn't happen. So you see in my call, you know, I read Mexico Saltillo Mission, blah, blah, blah. You're going to serve for 24 months. I'm like, sick. You leave August 29th. I got my call March 17th. So I had like 8 months of like well, not 8 months. I had 6 months of waiting to go on a mission. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I was so upset. I was so sad. I wasn't upset. I was like, hey, you know what? You know, God has a plan, whatever, but I was so sad. Because, like, I wanted to leave as soon as I possibly could. And then, but it was all a plan. And even more so because I'm really close with our one of our cousins. He's, you know, around the same age as I am. He's only, like, a couple months older than me, Isaac. And so me and Isaac have been best friends since, you know, since we were babies. I mean, he's only 2 months older than me. We grew up with each other. We did everything together. You know, most of the time, you know, I had lots of friends growing up and whatnot, but, you know, a lot of times it was like, yo, can I go hang out? Like, it was a Saturday. I was like, hey, mom, can you drive me over to Isaac's house? Like, we want to go do something, you know? And he got his call. He was going to be serving in Alabama, but Spanish speaking. And he also got to go to the Mexico MTC, I believe 2 or 3 weeks before me. So we got to be in the MTC together, which is freaking sick and so much fun. So, in the long run, you know, like I said, God has a plan. He makes plans for everything. So as sad as I was, it was really cool. My whole mission experience was very cool. And it, like I said, it was all a plan. It was meant to be. But part of me wish I didn't have people there, because you just see my face. I'm just like, oh, I'm so excited. Yay. To leave in August.
Yeah, God's plan for my opening for sure. Because when I read California, I was bummed.
Bummed. Well, like, I bet. How soon did you leave after you opened your call? Like, you opened your call, and how soon after did you leave?
I opened my call, I want to say in June. And I put my availability, like, the earliest I could do, which was, like, July. So it'd be, like, 4 weeks from when I'm submitting my papers in July, right?
Yeah.
And I think I put, like, not 4 weeks from June, sorry. I put my papers in, I think, like, late May, like, right after I graduated, I put my papers in. And September 23rd. So I got open it in June.
So, and then I left. Similar time frame?
Like, 3 months after I opened it. 3.5 months, probably. Right. Yeah.
Fair enough.
I didn't really care about the September part. I was just so bummed about the California part.
And everyone, it's hard, man.
Everyone, especially my mom, especially like our mom was telling me like at least you're Spanish speaking, at least you're Spanish speaking. I was like, I don't care, bro. Like,
that's not part. I would rather speak friggin' Cantonese. I just want to leave the country, man.
I'm like, yeah, I was like, I freaking would have learned Japanese if I could at least, you know, gone out of the country. I don't care.
True.
Because, you know, it's like, it's lame. Everyone's going to be like, where'd you go on your mission? Oh, California? I've been there.
Yeah. Like,
man, that sucks, bro. But,
hey, man.
You know, hindsight's 2020 now, so it's kind of like, I know God's plan, of course, same thing, similar. But it was definitely hard. It was definitely hard, like,
oh, for sure.
Opening up the call and, like, having your whole life. Because growing up in the faith, of course, it's just you're always looking. You're just the next big thing after high school is a mission. So you're always thinking about a mission, especially once you start becoming more of a young man.
Yeah.
And so the entire time you're just thinking, like, where could I go? And everyone always asks you that, too. Like, where would you want to go? Where would you want to go?
Yeah.
And then at this point in my life, too, Gavin had already served in Mexico. He was back already. And my dad, our dad, had already served in Spain. So I was like, Spanish-speaking foreign. Like, Gavin and dad got to go foreign. Like, I'm going to go foreign.
Yeah, dude.
So to go to California, which is a place I also have been myself, is just like, wow, that's lame.
Oh, man. I remember that, and I thought, man, that sucks. But then you served your mission, and I could have not been more jealous. Not for the reasons, like, people would think. Like, let's just put it this way. Me and Gabe... I guess I won't speak for Gabe, but I'm sure Gabe is on the same page as I am. I'm a mama's boy. In the greatest form of the sense. Not like I'm stuck to my mom's hip, but I love my mom. And, you know, probably also stems from our dad. Our dad is a phenomenal human being and just kind of taught us how to treat women. So, but I've always loved my mom.
My fiance would definitely say I'm a mama's boy. Yeah. So Leah would definitely say I'm a mama's boy. So you can group me in that.
Sounds good. We're definitely mama's boys. If you haven't seen our I did post for the first time on our Instagram and TikTok for a while. But if you haven't seen, we love our mom so much. There's a famous YouTube video about a Mother's Day skit about taking a photo for Mother's Day. And it's one of my mom's favorite YouTube videos. And me and Gabe remade it for our mother for Mother's Day as a gift. So that is on our Instagram right now, and I believe also our TikTok. So if you haven't seen that, go check it out. But yeah, me and Gabe have always, we just always have loved our mom. Our mom's our best friend. She's one of the coolest ladies. And why was I mentioning this? I totally lost my train of thought.
Mama's boy, I was in California.
Yes. Our mom took care of us while we were on our missions. I mean, even me, you know, like you have like a, I'm getting a little ahead of ourselves. I understand that, but just bear with me. But she loved us, man. I mean, Gabe needed groceries. My mom got a Walmart pickup order ready for him. Or, you know, I didn't have, for a lot of my mission, it's changed now, but for a lot of my mission, you're only allowed to talk via email to your family. And
only for one day.
Only for one day. And that's on P days. That's on Mondays. Emails. We were allowed to use Google Chat. We were allowed to do that on my mission. Some missions you weren't, but for mine, my mission president okayed that. So we were allowed to use Google Chat, at least for a good chunk of it. I think he may have taken that away, but.
Which that was, like, just put that in, like, picture, like, going from only emails where it's, like, long paragraphs and you send it. And some people only were allowed to send one email. Like, you couldn't just exchange emails back and forth.
Yeah, you're allowed to send, like, one email.
To your mom separately, but also to, like, you know, as a family.
But, and, like, P-Day is also, like, it's not only, like, oh, this is the day I got to talk to my family. It's also chore day. You know, you're doing your laundry. Grocery shopping. Laundry. If you can fit it in, maybe some, like, fun activity with other missionaries, like maybe playing some basketball, going on a hike.
Yeah, kick back and relax because you're not working all day.
Yeah, but, like, because the rest of the week, you're gunning. You're, you know, from sun up till sundown, you're moving around, talking to people, trying to bring people, you know, into Christ. So you're busy all week. So Monday's your day to get as much of your other chores done that aren't, you know, bringing others under Christ. You know, that's your job. You know, the rest of that, that's your one day. It's like, hey, you have the day off, but you don't have the day off. It's chore day. You got to get some stuff done. So you don't have all day to just email your family. So I remember a lot of the time, you know, I would send maybe a couple emails back and forth with mom, maybe a Google Chat, you know, chit chat real quick. But, you know, we've all texted with each other. There's only so much emotion and information you can give through text. But, you know,
right.
As missionaries, you're also only you're given kind of a monthly, what would you call it?
Allowance.
Monthly allowance, thank you. I was trying to think. All I could think of is the Spanish word for it. I was like, I can't think of what we're talking about. But yeah, like a monthly allowance kind of for your groceries and others, whatever you needed it for, you know, shampoo, deodorant, toothpaste, toothbrushes, whatever. But so as a boy who's 18 and was fed every single minute of his life because his parents – were awesome. I was hungry all the time. So I'm like, yo, Ma, I need like 50 more bucks. And mom, without not even a question, 50 bucks to my account, I would go take it out in cash, ready to go. Like, and this was like all the time. It wasn't every week, but it was all the time. And mom, I mean, I'm sure mom and dad, I mean, we're, you know, we're not, you know, poor by any means, but, you know, we're not swimming in money either. You know what I'm saying? So for my mom to do that, my dad to do that was awesome for me, and Gabe got the same treatment, if not better than me. I won't say it was better, you know. I would say better, but, you know, it's, you know, apples and oranges. Gabe was in the U.S., so things cost a little more. 50 bucks went a long way in Mexico for me. I could make that last forever, you know. For Gabe, 50 bucks was like, you know, maybe some ground beef in California, you know what I'm saying? So
seriously.
So it was a little different. You know, I'd like to say, you know, Gabe got way better treatment, but in reality, it was like, you know, I was given like the freaking world with 50 bucks down in Mexico. So
sure.
Definitely different, but, you know, our mom loved us. She treated us well. I mean, I remember Gabe like, yo, I need some groceries. And I was so jealous because all Gabe had to do was like pull up to Walmart and, you know, get groceries put into his car at the Walmart pickup.
No, literally, I didn't even have to get out of the car. I didn't have to
get out of the car to grocery shop, dog.
I had a car on my mission, too.
Yeah, Gabe had a car, dude.
Gavin,
all that stuff.
Was walking around everywhere.
Just heel to toe, man. That's all I did. That heel toe express, yeah. Baby. But
yeah.
I did jump ahead a little bit. But sorry, go ahead.
So we wanted to share a few stories and like experiences, obviously one being like the open call. We're going to talk a little bit about now the MTC, which Gavin did mention that he got to go there with our cousin Isaac.
Yes.
So the MTC is just like this, it's literally Missionary Training Center. That's what it stands for. And yeah, it's just what it sounds like. You know, you go there before you start your mission. You go there for, depending on a language you're speaking, you go there for a different amount of time. Me and Gavin were there for 6 weeks because we were learning to speak Spanish.
Yep. Yeah, when our dad was going through our mission, it was like it was differed all around. Like it was like, okay, you're learning Japanese. Japanese is way harder language than, you know, than Spanish. So you're going to be here for 2 months just learning language.
Yeah, it was if you're learning an alphabet and a language, you're doing 12. If you're only learning a new language but the same alphabet, then it was 6.
Oh, I did not know that. All I was told from what I remember was foreign language was 6 weeks. If it's your native language, you're in for 3.
That is, native language is only 3. That's true.
Okay, so a new alphabet was an additional 3 weeks.
Yeah, like or Russian, Japanese, Chinese, gotcha. You know, cool. Tagalog. Actually, I don't know if Tagalog is a new alphabet, too.
I'm learning something new, too. Sick.
Yeah, you're in there for way longer, which makes sense because you got a lot more to learn.
You got a lot more to learn, yeah. You're also learning a lot of, you know, religious stuff, you know, scriptures, you know, there's different doctrine. Lessons we teach to people, just like basic building blocks to our religion that are good to teach people. You know, eventually the goal is that they'll learn about everything, but, you know, to get people to come into Christ, just these basic first kind of lessons, and you learn those in the language you're going to be speaking to these people, so.
Exactly. So, Gavin, how about you share your experience? Because mine was very different.
Yeah, Gavin's. For sure.
And Gavin's was the basic, like, that was the basic way that it used to be about how you did the MTC.
Yeah, so I was pumped to be going to the Mexico MTC, although was a little sad I wasn't going to the Provo MTC. Think, like, Provo MTC is, like, the Marriott, you know, just 5-star hotel. And Mexico MTC is, like, a Hotel like 6.
Your Holiday Inn.
Yeah. It's not terrible. Yeah, Hotel 6 is a little too far. It's like, think like, you know, you're going to like a 5-star hotel, top of the lines, freaking awesome, food court's dope. And then Mexico MTC is like, it wasn't bad, but it was like, you know, maybe like 2.5 stars. It's got a bed and a sink that you can use to, you know, brush your teeth at and whatnot in a mirror. You know, that's kind of what you're getting. You got a bed and a sink and a toilet. That's what you got. Think about that. However, Mexico MTC was so much fun. The food some days was something else. And other days it was fantastic. And that's not a shot at Mexican cuisine. The Mexican people can cook some food. We were just getting frozen food warmed up. And it happened to be in Mexico. That was it. So no shot at the Mexican cuisine. I'm sure if the chef was put in charge, we would have some way better food. Unfortunately, we didn't get that. But, yeah, so I arrived at the Mexico MTC, and very quick. Like, it's, like, it's quick. It's so you show up. I got off the plane, and there's, like, 30 of us there, 30 missionaries. We're just kind of and we're waiting for a bus because, like, you know, there's just different planes coming in from all over the place with missionaries in kind of waves. So, kind of the gist that we got was like a bus had just picked up a bunch of missionaries probably 30 minutes before we were there, and we were waiting for buses to come back. So I was just sitting at the airport for like an hour. Damn. Hour and a half.
On these just no Spanish.
Cement steps. Don't know any Spanish. But finally, you know, somebody pulls up, picks us up, we get on. And Mexico City was bizarre. I don't know if any of you have been to Utah, those who are listening. I mean, most of you who are listening are family, so you have been. But if you haven't, Utah's just very, like, you know, our biggest city is Salt Lake, and it's not that big of a city, you know. Mexico City is just, like, enormous cement buildings. Like, they just build everything out of cinder block in Mexico, it feels like. Just everything's just cinder block, right, with gray cement in between. So it's super weird, super wild. We pull up. You know, we're going through all of this, just billboards and, you know, palm trees and all this stuff. It was, you know, just to me, it was just completely foreign to me. I just did, like, complete 180 and just cars everywhere. Just traffic. It was and saying it smelled a little weird, big city, funny smells, whatever. And as we finally get to the MTC, and, you know, very quickly you get in, they're like, here's this, you know, you get like all this like manila envelope of like my name tags, you know, some like papers to let you know kind of what your schedule is, where you're going, what's the plan, what rooms you're going to, here's a map of where you need to go, blah, 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 blah. There's pretty much nowhere, there's nobody there to really kind of guide you to where you're going. You just have a map. And they're like, all right. And then you kind of like have a quick like intro. The MTC president comes in and talks to us and like, you know, nothing like instructional really, just kind of like, we're excited you're here and your guys are missionaries and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, can you tell me where I'm sleeping tonight? Like, that's what I wanted to know. It was a long day. It's 7 o'clock. I haven't had food yet. Can we get some food in my belly? Like, I didn't care. I'm like, that, you know, about any spiritual message somebody had to share with me. I was like, can tell me where I'm sleeping and where can I get food, please? That's all I care about. And then you don't even like, they're not even like, here, this is your companion. Like, you know, like help you find companions. They just like, you get like a paper that just says like, companion, Elder Sabi, you know, like, and that was my companion. I was like, I literally was just walking up to these random faces. I was like, are you Elder Sabi? No? Cool. Next guy. Like, no context, just next guy. I was just trying to find Elder Sabi. To the point, I'm literally sitting in like the main building, like lobby of the MTC, just going, Elder Sabi! Elder Say, like just screaming his name, trying to find him. Cause like, I was like, I need my companion. Like, that's kind of like the rule. And me and Gabe will get into that as well. It's like, you know, once you're on your mission, like kind of, it's like kind of like the buddy system. You are with your buddy 24/7 with your companion. So, you know, I was like, they're like, no, find your companion and do not leave him. And I was like, all right. So I was just like, Elder Savy. I was like, all right. We go to house 29. There's a bunch of other missionaries in there. We have like this little house together. There's like two really big kind of like apartment buildings with a couple floors, and then the rest of it was kind of just like these little houses that had rooms with bunk beds in them. And it used to be an old like private school where like kids kind of lived on the campus and then got bought and turned into the MTC. There's just all these little houses and stuff, and that's where I lived. And so yeah, and then, you know, you'd wake up, like I said, you have your schedule, you know, you wake up at 7 a.m., or sorry, 6:30, wasn't 6:30, get ready for the day, do your morning exercises and your scripture study. 7:30 was our meal time, so we'd go and get food at 7:30, and then 8 o'clock was be in class, ready to learn, and then, and it was funny, because, like, it was also, like, gated. So, like, there's just a big wall around this school. So, pretty far into it. Because once you kind of got into it, like, 3 weeks in, I was like, can I please leave? Like, this is stupid. I was just like, I'm done. Like, 3 weeks in, I was so bored. Because, like, if there's one thing I've learned about learning a language, you can only learn so much sitting in a class speaking about that language. You need to go talk to people. I mean, obviously living in Mexico made it so easy for me, because like it was do or die. Like, I didn't have a choice. It was like, you either learn how to speak Spanish or you're not going to survive out here, dog. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, very quickly I was like super like, can I just like leave, because it sucked and it was boring. And in one of my emails I sent back to our parents, I was like, it's pretty much prison. You're told where to go, at what time, what to eat, where to sleep. You get an hour of yard time, like I described it as prison, you know? It wasn't, not even close. It was a great experience. Honestly, I had a lot of fun memories, you know. On P-Days, we got to play volleyball and basketball, and, you know, obviously I got to hang out with Isaac. But that's pretty much the MT experience. I do have one story from the MTC. So one thing you can do, at least for when I was in the MTC, was there's like a little, like, gift basket service. Like, you could send your missionary, like, send like an order to this person, and they'd go get it from, like, you know, stores, and then deliver it at the MTC, and then, you know, you could go to the mailroom and get a package from the mailroom from your parents. So mom would send me like little stuff all the time. You know, I was there for some holiday, I can't remember what it was or whatever. So like, mom sent me like the welcome package, so like had some candy and like a welcome sign or whatever. So I have a picture of me hanging it up on our wall in our room. And then mom would send me Krispy Kreme donuts every once in a while. Well, funny enough, there are two other Oldens at the time in the MTC. And you get a note. Like, you get a note, like, somebody,
other
like,
comes your
like,
cousin? Outside of your
no,
cousin?
No, me and Isaac.
Oh, okay.
So, well, what happens is you get kind of, somebody, like, lets you know, like, hey, there's a package for other Olden. Like, I can't remember kind of through who, but somebody lets you know, like, there's a package for other Olden. Well, okay. Like, week two, I'm in there. It was, like, a random day, like a Wednesday. And I see Isaac, you know, he's walking with his companion and he's walking down, you know, this road and he was going back to his apartment, but everybody was heading towards the main hall for a devotional. And Isaac's like, hey, dude, you want a donut? Your mom sent me donuts. I'm like, oh, sick. You know, like I figured like that's such a mom. One of my moms, like my mom would totally send Isaac donuts. Like that's not a weird thing. Didn't think twice of it. You know, mom would totally send Isaac, you know, again, me and Isaac grew up together. He, you know, my mom loves Isaac. So it didn't like register my brain like maybe those were meant for me. And I was like, oh, sick. Yeah, I'll take a donut. And so he gave me and my companion a donut. I leave off. And then in the MTC, because it's only missionaries, you know, every like district, you know, missionaries kind of separated in groups called districts and zones. And I believe it was either every district or every zone had their own P day. So mine was okay. Thursdays in the MTC. So, like, this was, like, Wednesday. The next day is my P day. And I get an email from mom because we're on Google Chat. She's like, did you get your donuts yesterday? And I go, no, I didn't get my donuts yesterday. What the heck? I'll go check today. And then I realized, like, oh, my gosh, I think Isaac got my donuts. And she was like, oh, that's hilarious. I was like, yeah, I think they gave them to Isaac. And she's like, that's hilarious. So, yeah, Isaac got my Krispy Kreme donuts. Lucky enough, I got one, you know. Lucky enough, I at least got one. I got one of my donuts. So but yeah, it was funny. It was funny, but yeah, it happened all the time. So then she would purposely put Elder Gavin Oldham on it. But you know, they still just say, hey, for Elder Oldham. And so then like me and Isaac knew, because his mom would also send us stuff. So if we were called like, hey, you have a package, we would go look and be like, is it for Elder Gavin Oldham or Elder Isaac Oldham? My cousin's here. That was only for half of my MTJ experience. Isaac left 3 weeks in. He was there 3 weeks before me, but nonetheless, it was really funny, and it was mega fun to hang out with Isaac. It was so nice because it's a little scary going to a foreign country for sure. Like it was weird, so it was nice to have a little bit of home in the MTC. I had Isaac there with me. It was good
for sure
to have Isaac there. You know, I was there for his back half of his MT experience, and he was there for my first half. So it was pretty dope. Yeah, pretty basic MT experience. You know, you go to class, go and get food, you learn a language and you learn how to teach people, and that's about it. It's a cool experience though. You have some cool teachers. I had some dope teachers, but Gabe had a way different experience than I did. So that's, I love, you know, in fact, I got to almost live Gabe's experience with him.
Yeah, pretty much. So I got called to serve in September of 2020, pandemic year. So,
oh yeah. Forgot about that.
Pandemic was still new. There was no vaccine yet. Like a lot of places were starting to like be less, like be more calm about it, you know, like you didn't have to wear a mask in stores and XYZ. Yeah. But yeah, the MTCs were closed down there. They were shut down. Yeah. Including the Mexico MTC. And I think like right when I started was when they started like partially opening up the Provo MTC again. Or it was around then, or maybe a little bit later. I don't remember exactly, but I was definitely just pure online. And so I was at home. I was a missionary, so I lived under all the rules that missionaries live under, right? You don't listen to music. You don't watch movies. You don't, you know, you, all those, you know, there's a long list of, like, requirements. And so I was living under those rules still, but I was at home.
How hard was that?
It was easy because I was allowed to watch Disney movies. That was allowed. That was an exception. Oh, yeah. Like that was one privilege I got because, you know, our state president, the same one that helped Gavin out, that he was really cool. He was just like, you know, you're gonna be home all day. Like,
yeah, and you didn't have like an all day schooling, right?
No. So the way Gavin's worked was like he had his
and you only you like you didn't
basically from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., you know, For me, it was not that way at all. It was, oh, you have a class at 8 a.m. to 11 a.m., and then you have nothing until 6 p.m. to 9 p.m.
And what were you, like, what was, like, the record, like, did you have any instruction on what to do in that free time? Or was it just, like, yo, you chill?
Personal study, language study, companionship study, but those are all only 3 hours. So I'm still, you know, I still got from 11, let's say I do that till 2, so I still got 4 hours from 2 to 6 to, like...
To just do nothing.
Do nothing. And they had, like, different things you could sign up for, like, through the MTC, like, the virtual MTC, you could sign up for stuff, like, oh, you want to be a part of... Like, you could do this extra devotional, like, you like similar stuff that you were talking about, like they had at the Mexico MTC, but it was all just virtual. And so, yeah, like, I would just wake up, 7:30, shower, get ready, maybe eat breakfast, sit down in front of a computer for 3 hours, just like right now. I got this, my laptop right here, I sit in front of the computer for 3 hours. Some days were better than others, you know, motivation-wise and schooling-wise.
Sure.
And then, you know, other days I didn't want to be there and I'd turn my camera off and I wasn't allowed to do this, but I'll just admit it. I went so crazy to the point where me and my MTC companion, Elder Tykert, still friends with him today, we would just turn our cameras off but still be in the meeting. And we would just play deep.io, which is like the fish game where like you can like eat other fish and like grow up and become like a shark.
Heck yeah, that's hilarious.
Once again, like same, like me doing my thing, like I just do whatever I want, which is sometimes good and then it's sometimes bad.
Sometimes bad.
Bites me in the butt when I just do what I want. But yeah, literally, like, I'm saying, but this was towards the tail end, like, the last 2 weeks, where, you know, you were going insane in the Mexico MTC.
Yeah.
I was going insane just in my classes. Like, the last 2 weeks was just awful.
Oh, I bet.
I was so bored. Like, I had already gone 4 weeks every day, except for, like, Saturday, having classes and having to sit in front of a computer screen for 3 hours.
Yeah, that would be
hours. Or 6 hours total, but 3 hour sessions.
Only imagine sitting down for that long.
And the worst part about it was the 6 to 9 p.m. class. Like my buddy, my best friend Tyler, he was in the MTC, similar to Gavin's experience with Isaac. He was in the MTC at the same time as me. Our like times lined up. And so he was also online, but his went from 8 to 11. And then from 1 to 4.
All the way, way better.
He had a little 2-hour break. And so he'd get done at 4. And then guess what he would go do? He would go hang out with our other friend, Brendan.
Yeah.
They would go out and hang out, you know, because, like, the rules of your free time were pretty open. You just had to make sure you weren't alone. Like, you couldn't just go drive yourself alone somewhere. But if you had a person with you, then you were fine.
You had to be with another priesthood worthy.
A quote-unquote companion. You know? Yeah. I don't call it a companion just because they're not with you 24/7, but you're not alone unless, you know, you're at your house, which is an exception because you can't have like your parent or somebody always just there with you, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. But somebody's there.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Dad was always home when I was doing the home MTC. But I was saying, oh yeah. So I would get done, like mom, you know, the family would get home from work and school at like 3 to 5 o'clock around there. So I'd get like 1 hour of like, yeah, I've been alone all day.
Yeah.
I finally get to hang out, have some fun with friends. And then right when it was like, oh, like, let's go to the store. Let's go do this. Let's do that. I have to get back on a meeting.
Gabe has to get back on his meeting. I remember that.
Gabe's got to get back on his class. You know? Like, I remember, too, like, everyone was like, oh, we're going to go outside and have a fire. Gabe, do you want to join us? I was like, I can't. I have to go back on my class. Like,
yeah.
From 6 to 9 p.m., it was such a terrible time. And I was just like, are you kidding me, man? Like, that was stupid. And Tyler would always be sending me pictures and stuff on Messenger. And that was allowed, don't worry. And he would send it to me being like, at the at a football game, but he obviously has his like attire on and his name tag. He's like at a football game, or like he, you know, other things, and it was just drove me crazy, just because all day I was alone, just and then on top of being alone, you can't do any of the things you want to do.
Yeah,
I couldn't. That's play, so I couldn't weird. Play video games. I couldn't just watch the movies I wanted to watch. I literally watched Gravity Falls. It's on Disney. It was legal. It was on Disney Plus. I literally just watched Gravity Falls, and I finished the whole series in, I think it was like 2 weeks, because I would just, I'm not on a class. Oh, I'll just watch Gravity Falls and fall asleep, and I'll just, I took so many naps.
Yeah. I remember and all like, those.
I would do my language studies and my personal study and my companion study. But at the same time, it's just kind of like you're trusting an 18-year-old to completely by himself do all these things who he's never even, let alone studied for more than an hour by himself. Now you're expecting him to do like 3 hours worth of studies. And I know I could have been more like hardworking and reliable, but at the same time, it's kind of like, wow, dang, that's a huge changeup to just be like, oh yeah, do it.
No, it is. Well, yeah, and you're also sitting there for, you know, like you said, like 3 hour periods just staring at a screen. That would suck, especially since you had just also graduated from high school and during COVID, where the last back half of your senior year was just all on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, exactly. I can only imagine how dull that can get. Like, even me, like, yeah, we were in a classroom, but one, there's a big difference between a classroom with, you know, other people who are going through the same stuff as you. Like, I could talk to my companion physically every single day, or my other friends who I made through the MTC and who went, you know, where we all went to the same mission together, you know, like I had these people who we laughed and joked around and hung out with. Like I hung on my district every single day, like, and on our P days, like we'd play volleyball together and stuff. Right. But not only that, like we had like, so we would have like, you know, our regular, like, you know, scripture study class and language class, but then we'd also have where we would do practice, kind of a role playing of teaching an investigator. We would do that in a completely separate building. Like we'd go to a different building to kind of give us a different place to be. That was kind of our teacher's idea. Just like, you know, because he understood, you know, he was a return missionary. He understood how dull the MTC can get. So he, like, we would, if it was a different thing we were teaching, we would do it outside, or we would go to this building, or we'd go to this building. We had our classroom, but he wanted us going anywhere we could that wasn't in the classroom so we didn't get so bored. And I 100% appreciated that, which was awesome. We had the free reign to do that. So I can only imagine, because like that, as dull as my experience was, I had the ability to move around and at least go somewhere different. You were just like, I got to go back into the office and stare at the screen for the next 3 hours.
Exactly. Stare at the screen and usually just sit in silence.
Like, because
I wouldn't even answer the questions either. I would really just sit there. And that's my own fault, honestly. But still, though, I'd just sit there just like that.
Ugh. I can only imagine.
But it's all right. You know, it definitely did prepare me, helped me get ready. So I can't complain too much.
Can't complain.
But that's just say, I wish, honestly, I would have just skipped the MTC if I could have. Even with hindsight 2020, looking back on it right now, I would still skip the MTC. Just been like, give me those 6 weeks to be, like you said, talking to people, learning Spanish with the people, learning the doctrine and lessons from my companion, you know, and also just on my own reading the material. Because in that setting, it was just so hard to learn and to focus and to even really get much out of it. Like, I got a little bit out of it, so I am appreciative to my teachers, but and I'm not even going to blame them, because it was just a really tough new situation for everyone.
For everybody, yeah. Yeah. Well, unless you have a funny story you want to mention or anything more you want to mention, MTC, I figure we can bump into, you know, arriving to your mission and, you know, trainers and whatnot. What do you think?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's hear yours.
So, I missed my flight.
Oh, yeah. That was so weird. Tell your side, because as Gabe's brother, even weirder.
So,
I was so lucky to be home when this happened, because I was living in an apartment at this time.
Yeah, so we, you know, we leave, and we had to, like, go, I can't remember, like, pick up a suit or, like, drop off a suit or something like that before before I made it all the way to the airport in Salt Lake, which is a 45-minute drive.
What time did you leave?
I didn't have no idea.
Remember what time you left?
I remember it was like 2.5. It was like if we need to be at the apartment, I mean at the airport at like 5 o'clock, we left probably at like 2:30 yeah. maybe. Like we left with plenty of time to be able to get there 2 hours early like you're supposed to, and then also to go take our detour to drop off that stuff. Well, yeah. we're driving and I'm like, oh my gosh, I forgot my missionary prepaid card, which is where we get our allowance. For me, it's where I would get my allowance on.
Right, yep.
Prepaid card. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm totally going to need that and want that. And we were 30 minutes from the house, so we were like, okay, it'll add like an hour on to our drive. That's fine. We're going to get there 2 hours early. Like, it'll be okay. So we flip around, go pick it up, flip back around, drive up to Salt Lake. We get there, you know, tradition of like dropping off a missionary for 2 years. You hug your family, you take pictures, you know, you say goodbye. By the time I get to the front kiosk with my MTC companion, it was about 50 minutes, 45 minutes until the plane took off. And the front desk flight assistant, you could say, completely denied us. They said, oh no, you need to be here at least 45 minutes to be able to get the bags, have enough time to get the bags down to the airplane. And mm-hmm. I was like, what? That's absolute garbage. Like, we're here on the dot at 45 minutes. It's like 44 minutes until the plane takes off. What do you mean we need at least 45? Like, just do us a favor and throw it on there. Like, let's go. And no, they wouldn't do anything, budge. And at this point, you know, we didn't have phones.
Yeah, right? So you can't click anybody.
I had a mission phone, but it didn't have a SIM card or anything like that, because that's the requirements of when you go on a mission. You're not supposed to bring your own SIM card or anything like that. You're just supposed to bring the device itself. And so I'm sitting there trying to get like crappy airport Wi-Fi, trying to like call my mom, sending text messages, but no one's. My mom was answering the text messages through the Wi-Fi, and she was like, she's like, well, you need to call someone. I'm like, well, I can't call anyone. So, long story short, we got it figured out to get a ticket for the day after. But it was just so embarrassing because, you know, just had all these goodbyes, and then mom and dad just picked me back up. Or no, dad just picked me back up, and I was like, hey. Like, I thought I was saying goodbye, but hey.
I remember that. Because, like, the night before, because I knew, like, Gabe was leaving kind of, you know, in the afternoon-ish. I was going to be at work. So, like, the night before, we had kind of all said goodbye to Gabe, like, because I wasn't going to be able to go on the car ride with him. So I was like, see you, Gabe. Love you, dude. You know, good luck on these next 2 years. And then where I worked, I was mowing lawns at the time. And so where I worked, it was like the kind of the main warehouse was like 10 minutes away from our mom's house. So I'd stop home on the way back from work and kind of hang out for a while, mooch food off of mom and dad in all reality. And so,
sure.
You know, I stop by and I'm just chit-chatting with mom or whatever. And all of a sudden, Gabe just walks through the door. He's like, what's up, guys? I'm like, what the heck?
What's up?
Also, great description of our mom. Mom knew that entire time and did not tell me that, oh, yeah, guess what? Gabe missed his flight. Didn't know until you walked through the door. And mom was like, oh, yeah, I forgot to tell you. I was like, thanks, mom.
That's hilarious. Yeah, so I missed my flight. And then, yeah, I flew out the next day. Nobody did. It really wasn't. It was, like, funny just because it's, like, I wasn't doing anything for the whole MTC. And then, of course, to get out of there, I missed my flight.
They messed it up.
So I get there, fly in. And usually when you fly in, you're also with a bunch of other missionaries going into your mission. And you all go to the, you know, that specific mission headquarters. They call it the mission office, but I'll just call it the headquarters. It makes more sense.
HQ.
And you go there, you get like an orient, or the night before you get like food and kind of like a little like kind of a welcoming ceremony, you could say, just like a bunch of like devotionals, messages, information, also like a lot of information and
big stuff information like that. Dump.
Yeah, huge information. And then the next day, your trainer, who is you know, you call it your trainer, but it's your first companion who trains you to be a missionary. That's why they call it your trainer.
Yeah.
They are there. They're more of an experienced missionary, anywhere from like, usually I'd say like 6 months on the mission field to, you know, anywhere from like that to like 18 months, around that range. of the 24 months. It could go outside of that if it need to be, but that's usually what it is. And so you get there, you meet your trainer, and then you guys have a little, like, one more little ceremony or devotional from the mission president, and then you get shipped off, you leave, you go to your area, go to your apartment, get ready to start teaching people. Well, for me, we get off the plane.
Oh, yeah, because you're a whole day late.
I'm a whole day late. I get off the plane. All of that. I get picked up, and my trainer was great. Like, he taught me to be a good missionary, definitely set me up for success, like, love him. But he was an idiot at the same time, because if I was in his situation, I would have been like, hello, like, what's up, Elder Oldham? Like, I'm Elder so-and-so. I'm going to be your trainer. Like, I'm your companion. Like, let's go, baby. This is big.
Yeah.
No, nothing out of him. I get off the plane. I see four missionaries. And I thought it was the weirdest thing. They all just started hugging each other. Well, let me phrase that. Elder Tyker, my MTC companion, was in front of me. They hugged him first, and then they just started hugging me. And I was like, okay, that's a weird thing to do. It's a very standard procedure, I guess, with missionaries, is to hug each other. I don't know what that if it was like that in your missionary.
That is true. 100%. Yeah, 100%. I mean, we did the bro hug, you know, like clap. Yours was just a full-on embrace.
Full-on embrace. I'm saying,
no.
Just two arms behind the back, just,
Mission-wide. Mission-wide, it was the bro hug. What's up, dude? Boom. You know, that clasp with the hand, you know. You know, the bro hug.
I think I did the bro hug for most of my mission, but, like, definitely that was a standard for the most part. It was just, like, everyone wanted a hug. And I was like, man, is everyone just that depressed out here? Like, does everyone just need a hug that bad?
Everybody just need a hug, man.
And so, human interaction. I thought it was weird, but they just said, like, okay, like, get your bags. We'll get in the car. And I was sitting there. I was like, I don't know who my companion is.
Yeah.
Who's my companion?
Gabe was doing what I was doing in the lobby of the MTC. Gabe's like, companion in the middle of California.
No, but I'm in the car and I'm like, who is my companion? I didn't even know until I saw which missionary started pulling his bags out of the car to move into our new apartment. I was like, oh, so it must be you.
Oh, so it's this guy. Got it.
And me and him got whitewashed. That means, like,
okay.
We both were new to that apartment. We both had to move in. Sometimes when you, like, because missionaries move around a lot in their missions. Like, sometimes if you move around, like, one missionary will stay, another one will come. Sometimes both will be new to the area. Sometimes they both stay. You know, it's all random. Me and him were both new to the area. That's called a whitewash. Like, you wash it, two new ones. And so, especially, like, he just had routine. Like, he was used to this, right? He'd have been out for a year, I think, at that time. He just started, you know, unpacking his bags, asking questions. He just helped himself to the food in the kitchen because it was a four-man apartment. Helped himself to the food in the kitchen, just started, like, just going. And I was just sitting there, and I just sat in the bed like, I don't know what to do. Like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. And he was like, oh, yeah, like, unpack your bag, you know? And I remember I hated that first conversation with him because we were trying to have a conversation. I was trying to get to know him, and I was trying to, like, introduce myself.
Was this in the morning or kind of like nighttime when you're getting to?
This was nighttime.
Okay.
This is probably like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Sorry, 6 o'clock in the afternoon, around there.
Okay.
Like, it was daylight when we had gotten to my apartment. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that. But then it was so sad because then, like, Elder Tyker, he left. And it was, like, just my buddy this whole time. I was like, no, he's just gone like that, bro. Just gone.
Oh, dude, that's so sad. It's scary.
Uh-huh. They're just gone. And, like, now you're here with these new guys. Like, okay.
And because you build a friendship, and that's, like, your only kind of, like, form of comfort among this new experience.
Yeah. And so I was the first missionary this guy had ever trained. So he was definitely new to the training scene. But it was just funny because I felt like, you know, like, obviously, like, being a young man, right? Once again, 19, 20 years old, 18 years old, like, you have no idea what you're doing. I'm not going to hold it against him being like, oh, he didn't teach me everything I needed to know. He wasn't perfect. Like, I'm not going to do that, of course. Yeah. But at the same time, I did feel like he could have been a little bit more like, do this. Here's some advice. Do this. Because once again, ain't got a clue what I'm doing. I ain't got a clue in the world. And so, yeah, I just, long story short, I figured it out. You know, I unpacked my bags. I, you know, unpacked my books, got settled in, you know, figured it out. And Gavin probably can attest to this in his mission, but there's a lot of culture, with things, like a lot of habits that are like mission-wide that people do.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it's everyone just does it in the mission. You know, like for me, in my mission, I don't know about if this was for you. My mission, it was like milk crates. Everyone had a milk crate. I should say a milk crate, but just think of like a little plastic, like, crate.
Yeah. Right.
Not little, but like decent size, you know, probably like maybe a foot to 2 feet. No, probably like 18 to 24 inches wide and then probably about, you know, a foot to 18 inches tall, like a rectangle. Everyone had one of those, and you would flip it on its side so the mouth is like facing you, and then you would put it in the corner of your desk, and that's where you would kind of slide all your books up there, like a little mini library. And then you'd put all your stuff on top, and then people would like hang different like little like trinkets, not souvenirs, but like, yeah, little trinkets, little family gifts or whatever, hang stuff, you know, just kind of this whole like, honestly, it's kind of like you. That's your life almost, kind of like, you know, like you decorated it. You like did, yeah. Like, it's like it was you.
That's your thing. And yeah.
Because you're not, you don't really.
I like that. That's kind of sick.
Yeah, you don't decorate your apartment because, you know, you move in and out every 6 months.
Doesn't make enough sense to have that much crap.
But you do want to have like your own little personality. So, yeah, you just kind of decorate your crate. And so I remember I got there and I put all my books on my table. And I look around, and once again, it was a four-man apartment, so there was three other desks with three other, like, missionaries' stuff. And they all had their crates, and they had all these trinkets, and it was all decorated, and I was just, like, had my lame, like, missionary manual and, like, my scriptures just in the corner. And I was like, man, this is sad. Like,
I'm just a
sad
newbie little missionary.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
And, but, yeah, I guess I don't need to get too much into my trainer. You know, I already talked about the first day, but what I would say about my trainer was just that, like, you know, he did his job, helped me out, blah, blah, blah. And I was very stubborn. Like, I'm a very stubborn person. If I want to do something, I'm going to do it. Like I said, like, I was like, oh, I didn't want to open my call in front of a bunch of people, so I didn't. You know, I don't care what the pressure is.
Amen, that's true.
And so even though I was hard-headed, he did a really good job of kind of, like, helping me to have an open mind and to be able to learn. But that's one good story I will share is that we would do district exercise, which, how Gavin explained, you know, missionaries aren't groups. Even in the field, you have your districts. And we would do this thing called district exercise, and it was every, you know, once a week, twice a week, we would get up in the morning instead of working out alone. You would all, as a district, go do something together in the morning for exercise, you know. And it was so funny because every time that we went to go play Ultimate Frisbee, soccer, you know, football or other games that were on the grass, he would always bring his cleats. He owned and wore cleats.
Heck yes.
But it was even funnier because I thought, oh, this guy must be like absolutely filthy at like soccer then. You know, if he's got cleats. Like, I brought basketball shoes and I'd say I'm a dog at basketball. So, like, yeah, you know, he brought his cleats. Like, he must be filthy at soccer. No. Dude was the most unathletic person you could ever experience.
It's always that guy.
Mm-hmm. And
guy's geared up, ready to just not dominate.
Exactly. And it was just so funny because he would always like suit up for his cleats and then he would just be running around and he played also played sports very like a sissy.
Okay.
You know, he wasn't very big. He was probably like 5'10", maybe 6 foot. You know, 160 pounds, 170 pounds. And so he would always, like, just think about, like, someone who's, like, running around but also scared at the same time, like, playing a sport. Like, that was him. But also, nice. Like, super uncoordinated. Super uncoordinated. This dude went, like, he was decent at soccer. Like, and by decent, I mean, like, I was just as good as him. But when it came to, like, using your hands for throwing, catching, oh, dude, he's an absolute zero. He's never even thrown a ball in his life.
Hand-eye coordination just ain't up there. Got it.
Yeah, and so, especially when, like, you need to be, like, when he's your, you know, quote-unquote trainer, or I could say, like, master, you know?
Yeah.
When he's running around like that, and he's not even, like, and he's like looks like that when he's playing sports, it was so hard for me to be like to humble myself to him, you know.
Oh,
like,
for sure.
Oh my god.
Well, yeah, because that's like a kind of like the trainer trainee relationship is kind of like, because you're in your companionships, you know, we never did like the, oh, I'm the junior companion, I'm the senior companion. It was always just like, you're my companion. Like, that was what our mission was. The only time that dynamic changed was when you're a trainer and a trainee. And it's just because like usually mission is like, okay, what are we going to do? It's usually like a 50-50 decision. You guys make a decision together. As the trainer, it was always like, because this guy's new, it's like, he doesn't know. It's just like, we're doing this. Let's go, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I totally get that. I could only imagine like being like, what the?
Who is this guy, and why should I just trust him? And
this guy's making all of the decisions.
He's telling me things that, yeah, he's like telling me things to do, like, hey, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. I'm like, this guy's telling me to do this. The guy that came and threw a basketball.
Yeah,
honestly,
that's hilarious. That's so funny.
That's funny that you said that there was no like junior senior companion dynamic in your mission, because in my mission that was the most petty thing of all time.
For real, you guys did that?
Yeah, because we had cars, and the senior companion was the one that was supposed to drive. Like only them were supposed to drive, so that's why it was established, because only they drove. And so
not on our mission, and maybe that's because we didn't have cars, so there wasn't a reason to decide that. But
yeah, ours was just too deep into it though. But yeah,
we're companions.
A petty thing.
Dang, that sucks. I honestly loved it, because it didn't matter if you were, you know, oh, I have. The only time it kind of changed was like, not like change, like for me, like it was just kind of fun to know kind of where somebody was at in their mission. Like I never treated them differently. You know, you learn just as much from a newer missionary than as you do an old missionary. Everybody's got something to add. It's why you got your companions. And like me and Gabe said at the beginning of this, you know, God has a plan. Every decision, whether it be your companion or where you're serving at the time of your area, I mean, all that involves prayer and revelation from somebody, you know, in charge of you, whether it be your mission president or the assistants to the president, whoever it is, you know, even up to getting your mission call, it's always, you know, somebody prayed and received revelation from God to let you know where you're supposed to be and who you're supposed to be with at that time. So, you know, there's a reason for all of it, right? So but I loved it, because it was always like, you know, the only, like I said, the only time it kind of changed, and not really, you know, there's still a lot of 50-50 decisions. Just like, you know, if there was a decision that needed to be made and like, your companion probably couldn't help you as a new missionary who's brand new, then you just made that decision. But other than that, it was always just still 50-50 decisions. What are we doing? What do you want to teach this person? You know, because I've always been a person who's believed in the method of, you know, baptism by fire, cold turkey, everything. You know, like if you want to quit something, cold turkey, quit it. Like I cold turkey quit everything. If I don't want to do something, I just stop. I can't like lean myself off of it. I don't do well in the same sense of, I don't do well if you're going to baby me into something, I'm going to take advantage of the babying, which is bad on my part. Like I should be more open to like, oh, let me like learn. Me, like I'm like, throw me in that fire and let me learn. Let me crash and burn and let me learn, you know, throw me in and let me mess up. That's the best way I learn. It's the quickest way I learn. I don't do well with the like, yeah, let's just take this by baby steps, because I milk that stuff. I don't know why, but I do. If you're going to let me be a baby, I will be a baby. And it's not good, but I do it. Like, I know I do. So, like, I'm just aware. It's like, yo, throw me in there. So, and that's how I trained all of the kids I trained. And I loved training. But I did get the first 2 days. I did not miss my flight. I did make it on time. However, we were very well aware of who. So what we did is the first day we show up, we had like a quick little, we had a meal with our mission president and his wife. And some of the greatest people I know to this day. They're freaking awesome. And man, can that lady cook. I miss her cooking. I miss Sister Cahoon's cooking. She was, man, when we showed up, she could, like, I'm talking like, think like deep dish French toast. I don't even know what it was, but it was like, just like thick, like cake, but it was cinnamon toast and it was delicious. Anyways.
Wow.
We got a great meal. And then our mission met with us one by one. There's 14 of us. Our mission president met with us one by one. Now, let me remind you. Everything in Mexico is built out of freaking cement and cinder blocks. So not only does it not trap it traps heat, and when it's cold, it traps the cold. There is no escaping the elements other than wind in Mexico, essentially. There's also no AC. Okay. You have like these little mini AC units attached to the wall if you're lucky, if you're rich, If not, you have like little, maybe like a fan, you know. Well, you know, my Mitch President, the Mitch President lives in kind of a nicer home, so he's, you know, comfortable in his, you know, next three, I think it's 3 years you're a Mitch President or whatever. Yeah, anyways, three. So we're at the mission, we're at his house. This is the first time I felt AC in a long time. So we just ate our meal. He's like, I'm going to meet with all of you one by one. You know, when one guy's done, I'll send the next guy to grab the next guy, right? And he said, he had a bunch of rooms. He said, there's a bunch of beds, bunch of rooms. Go take a nap, chit chat on the couch if you want. Don't care. You guys are open. So I, you know, my shoes are off. I go up to the top bed and I pass out.
Of course, as you were. You said I can relax, take a nap. I'm taking advantage of that.
And this is the
I'm
first time I felt. And we also had left at like 3 o'clock in the morning to get onto our flight. So I'm this. It's like noon. I'm exhausted. I've already been up for way too long. You know.
For sure.
I'm tired. So I go upstairs. This cold AC is just like blowing on me. I'm just like
asleep, slumped.
And in Mexico, at least where I was at, there's the 45 hottest days of the year. It's called Canicula. And we're in the middle of it. Like, it ramps up. You hit, like, the middle of that 45 days, and, you know, we're hitting, like, 120 degrees hot, 130 degrees. Like, you know, easily get heat stroke days, you know, like, not even a question. We're in the middle of that when we show up. So I'm taking full advantage of that AC because I'm like, tomorrow's going to suck because tomorrow I'm getting my companion and getting bust out of here. So I just pass out, meet my Mitch President. He's a super cool dude, you know, super excited to work with him, whatever. Next day. Oh, and then so we do all that. Sorry. There was an important part of this. After we meet with our Mitch President, we go back to the Mission HQ, and the plan was to kind of give us a first feel for proselyting, for going out and knocking doors. So the 14 trainers meet us there. They each grab one of us, not like their companion. They don't know either. They just say, you know, hey, who wants to go with me? You raise your hand and you go. Like, and so, you know, the first guy was like, hey, who wants to go with me? I'm like, yo, I'll go. I go with him. He's a super dope dude. He is sick. We go knock doors. He's like, hey, do you know how to, like, did they teach you anything about knocking doors? I'm like, I can say my name in Spanish and that I'm a missionary of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's about it. That's like, that's all I got in Spanish right now.
That's all I got in Spanish.
I'm like, soy un missionario de la Iglesia de Jesucristo de los Santos de los Últimos Días. You know, like, that's all I got, you know? And he's like, all right, when I point at you, hit that. I'm like, I got it. So that's what he did.
When I point at you, hit that. That's so cool.
That's the exact sentence he said to me. He's like, when I point at you, hit it, dog. Like, that's what he said. Exact sentence. I'm like, all right. This dude's from Mexico City, but spoke perfect English. Like, his mom and dad put him through, like, a really good school. So, like, he spoke perfect English. So, like, all right, sick. So, sure enough, we knock on the door. He's like, hey, I'm Elder, I believe it was Acosta, actually. He's like, hey, I'm Elder Acosta. This is my companion, Elder Oldham. I'm like, hola, soy Elder Oldham. You know, I say my whole thing. He's like, and he literally goes like this. Like gives me like a thumbs up. Like, thumbs like up. A big smile. Like, turns nailed around. It. Like I'm like behind him. He turns around. He's like, anyways, like, hold on, gives me the thumbs up. Like, this dude was dope. He was sick. Anyways, so as we're like, and, you know, we teach, you know, we kind of chit chat with this guy. This guy lets us into his home. We give him a book. The whole goal was to give out 2 Book of Mormons. It was kind of what we're trying to do. We each had 2 Book of Mormons. The goal was to go out, meet people that we could share the Book of Mormon with, and then gift them one, right? So we gift this guy a Book of Mormon. Then we knock a couple doors, can't find anybody. Finally, we find another guy and give it to him. And during this whole process, I'm talking to Elder Acosta. I'm like, hey, dude. I'm like, yeah, tell me about the other, you know, the elder trainers, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, all of us speak English except one, Elder Mijangos. And I'm like, okay, cool, sick, sick. So my chances of getting an English-speaking companion, very high.
Hi.
So the next day, we're sitting there. They're announcing who our companion is. And sure enough, I get Elder Mijangos, the one and only dude who does not speak English. Not a lick of it. Not even a little bit.
Not a lick of English.
Not a lick. And let me tell you.
Puro Español.
It made for the most miserable 6 weeks of my life. Because, like, so missionary training, I don't know if you mentioned this, but missionary, your training is 12 weeks.
Yeah, 3 months of training. Field.
In the mission field. It's 12 weeks with your trainer. I had 2 trainers. Your first one is mom. Second one's dad. So Elder Mijangos was my mom. Now, this is no shot at Elder Mijangos. Elder Mijangos to this day is still my favorite companion. I love that man to death. He is hilarious. I love him, and we learned a lot together. However, you're in a new foreign country. Nobody speaks English. I don't speak Spanish. I probably didn't speak for 3 weeks. I'm talking like nothing. Like, I'm just dead silent, walking, knocking on doors, and listening to this dude speaking a language I don't understand. It sucked. Like, I'm talking, like, straight up, like, probably got, like, I got severely depressed. I almost went insane. Like, not talking that much is hard. And then not being able to understand, like, I'm not getting any sort of social interaction because I can't talk to anybody, right?
You're essentially alone, honestly.
Yeah, like, I was alone. I was by myself for 3 weeks is what it felt like. And my only saving grace, the only reason I didn't leave my mission was because of Elder Jr. Elder Jr. was our zone leader, and we were in this little town called Nueva Rosita. And Nueva Rosita had two areas, was split in half, right down Main Street. There's only one branch in both areas that was combined. So we would eat lunch together every single day. So for an hour, I was able – well, not even an hour because it's rude to speak in a different language in front of other people. I'm sure all of you know that. So when we were in our – we would always eat lunch with members. They would provide us food. So while we were in their house, I would never speak English. But, you know, on the way there, I would speak English with Elder Jr. And, like, on our way back to our areas before we split up, I would speak English. So for those, like, maybe 25 minutes of every day, I got to speak a little bit of English and have social interaction. His companion also, Elder Alarcón, which turned out to be my dad eventually, was also from Mexico City and spoke perfect English. Nice. So now, Elder Mijangos is one of the greatest missionaries of all time. I love that man to death. Quickly, it probably wasn't 3 weeks, maybe more two, but we finally got the idea. Elder Mijangos really, really badly wanted to learn English. And it was also advised if you have a companion, you're supposed to teach – it's part of language study. They're all supposed to do language study. They're supposed to take advantage of their English-speaking companion and learn English. Because no matter where you're at, if you can speak English, it broadens your horizons in the professional field no matter where you're at. So more, especially in Mexico, sure. Yeah, you have way more opportunities business-wise. You can get a job, you know, even remotely in the U.S. or a better job where they're hiring people down in Mexico that speak English, right? Increase your amount of pay and your lifestyle and all that. So it's very well advised. And Elder Mijangos want to take full advantage of that. So what we did is, and I don't know why it took us so long, but probably a couple weeks in, I would tell Elder Mijangos about my family and my likes and my dislikes and about my life in Spanish to the best of my ability, and Elder Mijangos would correct me. Now, he wouldn't correct me in the middle of it. That was kind of the rule. I'm supposed to struggle all the way to the end of my sentence, and then he's like, this is how I would say it. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool, cool, cool. And the same way, Elder Mijangos, in his broken English of whatever he knew, would try to tell me the best of his ability about his family and his likes and his dislikes and blah, blah, blah. All in English. And when we were at home, he could only speak English and I could only speak Spanish. Never was allowed to speak English. And which was super cool in the long run because I'm super grateful for it. And it turned out to be super awesome because I was known as, like, from my generation of the 14 missionaries, I was like, you know, a lot of people would kind of recognize me as one of the best Spanish speakers to the point where I convinced many people of Coahuila that I was from Oaxaca. That was kind of my joke. If you don't know anything about Oaxaca, people from Oaxaca are usually pretty dark. They're a darker Mexican group.
And they're tiny. They're short. They're so short.
Short and dark.
Oaxaqueños. Los Oaxaqueños.
And I am tall and white as can be. So my joke was, convince people I'm from Oaxaca. If I can do that, I speak some pretty dang good Spanish. I never had an English-speaking companion, except El Arcon, but he was a native Spanish speaker as well. I actually asked him to always speak Spanish with me anyways. But yeah, so Elder Mijangos is awesome, and my favorite thing is he's like, teach me phrases and sayings. Like, he'd always ask me that, and I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, anything. So what I taught him is pickup lines, like those cheesy pickup lines. To the point where my favorite one that I taught him, and I was like, you know, are you from Tennessee? Because you're the only 10 I see. He said that to every new companion he had after that. So there was one, Elder Schoenberger comes out to me. He goes, this is the first time I'm ever meeting him. And he's like, I don't know how, but he heard that Elder Oldham was going to be in his zone or in his district. So he comes up. Wednesday was when we had our district meeting. He pulls up and goes, "Who's Elder Oldham?" And I go, "Oh, that's me, dude. What's up?" And he's like, "You know, I'm like a year into my mission now." And he's like, "You know, I haven't seen Elder Mihangos in forever." And he's like, "I hate you." And I go, "Why?" You know, kind of joking, kind of not. And he's like, "Are you the one who taught Elder Mihangos all those stupid pickup lines?" I go, "Yeah, that was me." He's like, "That's all he says in English." Which is even funnier because, like, by that time, Elder Mihangos, like I said, he took advantage of it. He spoke pretty good English by the time he left on his mission, which was around this time that I met this guy. Like, Elder Mihangos had probably left like a month after that. So he had already been speaking, and this guy had just got a nuke. Like, he had just left Elder Mihangos as a companion. So Elder Mihangos spoke pretty good English at this point. But he's like, the only thing he would say to Elder Schoenberger were those pickup lines. He's like, "Elder Oldham taught it to me. Are you from Tennessee? You're the only Ten I see." But he wouldn't give you a pause. That's like, he would just say it really fast. "Are you from Tennessee? Because you're the only Ten I see." It was so funny. So I tell him that all the time. But man, but I benefited a lot from Elder Mihangos because, you know, like I said, you know, he taught me everything I needed to know. And then I had Elder Arcon, who taught me a lot. Our parents met him. You know, I was with him for Christmas. So he said hi to all of you guys. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
But yeah, so he said hi to all you guys. But Elder Mihangos loved basketball. Loved it. And in our area, there was a indoor hardwood floor with nets and very nice baskets that nobody ever used and was free to the public.
Wow. So
every P day, we would go and play hours of basketball. Me, Elder Alarcon. There was even members that loved basketball. So we played full-on pickup games every single Monday. And it was so much fun. Like, that's unheard of. Like, I'll be honest, I'd never met another group. I met a couple other missionaries who liked basketball, but another group that liked basketball, never met them.
Wow.
Never met another group. Lucky. So that first, you know, my first area, I got to play basketball all the time. And that's just what I needed because, like, I love basketball. And, again, just kind of brought a little bit of home with me, you know. Like, I got to do something I love. So I made those, you know, as depressed as I was some days not speaking, it got significantly better. I started contributing a lot more to our lessons and whatnot.
Conversations and stuff.
Conversations. And I got a lot better, not to Elder Mihangos' fault. I just progressed in Spanish. And then he got moved, and I went with Elder Arcon. Elder Arcon was a zone leader. So he had to go to a lot of different zone meetings and stuff. And so what happened was there was a new zone leader. I'm blanking on his name. Doesn't really matter. He was training a brand new missionary. But they'd have to go to all meetings together, leave. So I was just brand new missionary, stuck with even more brand new missionary when they would leave. And they're like, "All right, go knock doors." And so I knew because I had switched areas. So I got to serve in both. I served in Nueva Recita 1 and Nueva Recita 2, both of those areas. So I had to, he's now in my area, in Nueva Recita 1, my previous area. So I knew that like the back of my hand. So I'm like, so he was looking at me. He speaks perfect Spanish. You know, he's from Mexico City. Actually, fun fact, he lives in Salt Lake now. Saw him the other day. But
wait, that's hilarious.
Yeah, super weird, actually. But he lives in Mexico. He lives in Salt Lake now. But yeah, he would look at me and be like, "All right, you tell me where to go." Because, you know, again, it's kind of nerve-wracking. You're new. Like, as much as he knows how to speak Spanish, he doesn't know how to, like, teach. So he's looking to me like, "Hey, let's go. Where do we go?" And I'm like, "I don't know, dude. I don't even speak Spanish." So, like, to our best of our efforts, together, we got a girl. We went and taught a girl. We found her and we baptized her. He baptized her and I confirmed her. I gave her the gift of the Holy Ghost. It was one of the coolest experiences of my life. Not that day. We didn't all do that in one day.
You made it but sound that like day, it was that day.
Sorry. That night. So that night, we go knock doors. It's freezing cold. It's freaking cold. We're knocking doors, and this happened a couple times, like probably like 3 or 4 times. So in those 3 or 4 times, you know, this is like a weekly thing. They had like this weekly meeting they had to go to with somebody. I can't remember. But anyways, we knock on this door. This girl comes out. She's like 15, I think, and her mom's there. But her mom doesn't really want anything to do with us. But her daughter's really interested in religion and stuff.
Okay.
She had been talking about Catholic, being Catholic or whatever. Kind of start talking to her grandma a lot about it. But, you know, we knock on her door. She's like, "Hey, yeah, come in." So we teach her. and she loves the first lesson. We come back, we teach her again, you know, teach her the second lesson, come back again, teach her the third lesson. And, you know, every time, because I knew I was going to go hang out with Elder Hasso, was his name. I'm going to go hang out with Elder Hasso. So, like, I would, in my morning study, I'd also pray about this girl we're going to go teach. And so, you know, I'm like, all right, what do I need? Like, and so as I did that, and I don't know what it was, and maybe that's what helped, you know, maybe God was just like, hey, this, you know, Gavin needs to be able to speak to this girl in Spanish. So he helped me. My Spanish progressed quick. Like, it was okay at the end of my first 6 weeks of training. Dang, in that second 6 weeks, I mean, I was speaking Spanish, brother. Like, I'm not kidding. Like, I was speaking Spanish, dude. Like, I felt so fluent. I probably was still terrible. And obviously it progressed as I spoke to more missionaries and spoke more Spanish and got better. Because one thing I learned is you can't be prideful. Like, just mess up and let other missionaries say, hey, you said that wrong. Sick. Thanks, dog. You know, and like fix it. You know, that was it. Or if they say something you don't know, I was like, hey, what does that mean? He's like, oh, it means this. I'm like, sick. Thanks. And so like maybe that's what it was. Maybe my first 6 weeks, I was a little prideful. And my second 6 weeks, I was like, hey, you know what? You suck at Spanish. You need to learn it. Stop being prideful. I don't know what it was, but something about it. So like, but like we taught this girl and then she was like, yeah, let's get baptized. And I was like, what the heck? Like we were sitting there and he was like, before we went in, Elder Hassel looks at me and goes, like, it's kind of like the lesson, like the last two lessons. And usually in those last two lessons, it's like either the second to last one or the last one, you kind of like, you invite him to get baptized. It was kind of like, kind of the norm, you know? Yeah. I had been through this routine with my other companion, but he does all of that because, you know, I'm not better at speaking Spanish than him. So he did a lot of it for me. So, and, you know, did a lot of the heavy carrying. So was with Elder Hasso, it was kind of like more of a 50-50 effort, which was mega fun. It made that my training experience super fun. So he looks at me and he goes, should we ask her to get baptized? And I go, I don't know. What do you think? And he goes, I don't know. Oh, all right. We're standing in front of her house. She could probably see us. I'm like, well, let's go around the corner and kneel down and pray. He's like, all right. So we did. We walked around, kneeled down in the dirt road, and just prayed to, you know, hey, should we ask? I can't remember her name right now. I actually follow her on Carla. I said, yo, should Carla be baptized? Should we ask her to be baptized? And I look up, and I go, yep. Like, that was the answer. Like, it wasn't like, yes, like, maybe. I was like, yep, let's go. So we didn't teach her the lesson, actually. I think we were so excited to ask her to be baptized. We didn't even teach her a lesson.
Here's my kid. You want to be baptized?
We go in. We have a prayer with her. We're like, have you been feeling with our lesson? She's like, oh, I've been enjoying them. She's came to church from day one since we taught her and have read half of the Book of Mormon at this point. Like, she was like golden investigator, like straight up. And so I was like, you know, and then finally I was like, I looked at Elder Hasso and I was like, well, me and Elder Hasso want to ask you something. And I look at Elder Hasso, I'm like, do you want to ask her? And he goes, yeah, for sure. And so then he asked her, like, yo, you want to get baptized? She goes, yes, I've been waiting for you to ask me. Like, that's literally what was her response. I was like, heck yeah. That's hilarious. And then we were so excited, and I was like, all right, sick. We said a closing prayer and left.
Wow, simple.
We left, and then we realized, oh, shoot, we probably should have taught a lesson. So then, but I think we also kind of, because we had to get back and meet our companions at the bus station. We had plenty of time to get there, but I think we were just so excited we did kind of cut it early. And we get there, and so we tell them, I'm like, hey, you guys might want to go back and teach her that lesson. We didn't teach her anything. He goes, oh, yeah, good point. So they went back that same day and taught her. So then they taught her the last two lessons. And typically kind of how it works is you get baptized and then you receive the Holy Ghost, two separate, you know, occasions. And typically it's usually the missionaries who taught you. Now, I did a lot of the teaching, but the other missionary who I'm totally blanking on his name right now, I know his first name. His name is Zaid. Zaid, he did a lot of the heavy lifting as well. He did a lot of teaching, so I'm not like taking any credit from him as far as he did as far as teaching goes. However, she asked Elder Hasso to baptize her, and then Elder Hasso called me. He was so excited because I kind of talked about it that same night. He's like, dude, Carla wants you to give her the Holy Ghost. And I was like, I don't know how to do that in Spanish. But I'm down. So I did. And I for that, the rest of the next 2 weeks, like every day, that was my language study. I would just open up my missionary handbook and like read that prayer over and over and over again. So I had it locked in my head. I was like, I got to be able to do this. Like, I want to be able to do it so well because I wanted to have a good experience. And
of course,
That was the second person I baptized. But my favorite, probably on my mission.
That's cool.
Because of how like guided by God I was. Because like, cool. By the time at the end of my mission, I mean, I baptized up quite a few people. But by the time of my end of my mission, you know, I wasn't relying so much on the whole Spanish speak. Like the Spanish speaking I had down. I didn't need to be like, hey God, can you help me out with this? You know, like help me out with the Spanish speaking.
Right.
Definitely still the teaching side of things. You know, I prayed every day about who I was teaching and whatnot. So, but it felt more like, you know, that was like 50%. It was like, I you know, 50% of it was like, I need to be able to speak and for them to understand in their language, right? That's at least how I viewed it. So like the teaching side of it was another 50%. It was probably more like 25, 75, maybe even less. But that one girl was 100%. God was telling me what to say in Spanish and helping me speak Spanish as well as what to teach her in Spanish. You know, like it was 100%. Like I literally was just like a vehicle for God. Like he was just like, okay, I'm not there, so I'm going to need you to do it, brother, all right? Me and you, we're going to do this together, you know? Like, that's probably why it was so special to me, because, like, you know, like I said, it was 100% God. It just happened to be me saying the words. Happened to be my vocal cords moving. So that one was super cool. Probably the one I'll remember forever. Like I said, I follow that girl on Instagram. You know, we still chit-chat all the time. Like, I'm very close with a lot of people I taught and people I met on my mission.
I know. So. That's so cool with the social media, about being able to stay connected with your friends. Well, we're going to need to do a part two of this.
We might, yep.
We'll do a part two. We'll get some more stories. We wanted to talk more about Capans because those are always funny.
Yes.
But, yeah, the mission is so unique because it's just such, like, the rules. So you appreciate different things as well as the people. Like, it's such a – it's so unique. It's
That's
it's
true.
Also, like, a bunch of good memories.
We didn't get into any of the rules of being a missionary. We need to talk about rules. That.
Yeah, so we'll definitely give a part
definitely
two.
Get a part two.
Missionary experiences.
Yeah, we'll have to – we'll give you guys a part two. And we do promise we are also getting you guys the girl POV of the proposal and whatnot. Just some plans. For some reason, my wife decided to be super social this week, so she's not available. but we'll get it. We'll get it. It might be a little bit out of sync with the rest of these episodes, but you guys will eventually get the girls' POVs of the proposals and whatnot and what their view of it was. But yeah, Gabe's totally right. We're an hour and 40 in on these stories. So we'll get you guys a part two for the following week. And yeah, but
hope you enjoyed all of our mission stories. Hope you got
so
to laugh
far.
A little bit. It's it was a real eye opener of experience for the both of us. But
for sure,
yeah. Well, Gavin's gonna post on Instagram.
I promise I'll do it. I will. There are more
Send
and more
a picture
clips
of
being
Carla
made
up on there.
True. There you go. I think really what I was waiting for is just to kind of build up a library of some podcasts so we could start building some clips and whatnot, because that's really what people want to see, just clips of our podcast. So I'm kind of waiting for a library of clips to build up. But I have those now. More and more will come out on our Instagram. But, yeah, you guys can follow us at The XL Podcast on Instagram and TikTok. That's where we're at for now. Those are the main ones I'll post on. Nowhere else. You can find me at Gavin_Oldham anywhere else. Gabe, where can they find you?
Gabe Oldham. Everywhere else as well.
Sick. Yes, thank you for listening to us. Sorry this one was so long. But like I said, missionary, it's 2 years of a lot. So we'll try to cram in the rest of what we can on the next one. Maybe there's a part three. I don't know. We want to share as many funny stories, because a lot of them, there's a lot of good stories from a mission. I would love to get some of Dad's stories on here too, because he has some crazy
for
ones.
For sure. Funny.
But we'll wait for another podcast for that one. But yeah. Please follow us on all forms of social media. Please let us know. Give us any feedback. We take feedback from everyone. Our dad lets me know, gives us feedback all the time on our podcast, and we take it well. So please let us know kind of what you guys want to see, what you guys want to know, and we'll make a video about it. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
See ya.